Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. In her newspaper column, Rapid City humorist Dorothy Rosby shares her personal foibles, faults, mistakes, and misfortunes. But they're all common, often mundane things her readers can relate to, from feeling nervous and guilty and trying not to say the word bomb during an airport screening to the responsibility of trying to maintain friendship bread. Rosby has written her column for 18 years, and it's currently featured in publications in 11 states and nationally in Exceptional People magazine. By day, she's the community relations director for Black Hills Works, an organization supporting more than 600 people with a variety of disabilities. Rosby has just released her first book. It's called I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better. She joins us from her studios at the Dahl Arts Center in Rapid City. And Dorothy, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. And I'd like to give listeners just a taste of what your writing is like. And I'm wondering if you could read the first couple of paragraphs of a piece that you have about the telephone. It's called What Hath Bell Wrought?
Sure, I would be happy to. The first words ever spoken on a telephone were those of inventor Alexander Graham Bell to his assistant, Thomas Watson, on March 10, 1876. Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you. These words not only mark the beginning of telephone history, they are also the first documented example of poor telephone manners. No hello, no please, no am I getting you at a bad time. I suppose we can forgive Bell for his lack of courtesy. He must have been terribly excited, what with inventing the gizmo that would revolutionize communication and make it possible to win radio call-in contests. And Watson may not have taken offense anyway. He was probably thrilled he wouldn't have to order his pizza by mail anymore.
I love that. How did you get, I'm sure this is a question you get all the time, but how did you get started as a humor columnist?
Well, I've always liked to write, and I've always liked to make people laugh. But I think the real kicker was Toastmasters. I've been a member of Toastmasters for 20 plus years. Toastmasters is a group that where people practice their public speaking skills, and I have been a member so long and done a lot of speeches, and it was participated in a lot of public or humorous speaking contests, and even won a few. So actually, it was the humorous speaking contest that got me started. I was doing speeches before I was writing the column, and even now I practice my column on my audiences, my Toastmaster Club audiences, so that I can see what works and what doesn't work. So I think it was Toastmasters.
So how do you go about taking these ideas and translating them and putting them on the page? That seems to me that that would be a different way of writing and being humorous, or maybe it's not.
As opposed to speaking, actually, they are so tied together in my head. When I'm writing, working on a piece, I actually am reading it out loud about half the time. My family thinks I'm in there mumbling to myself, but I really do read out loud a lot when I'm writing. And maybe that's important for all writers, but I think it's really important for humorists, because you want your reader to almost hear your voice. And so I want what I write on the page to sound like what I would say if I caught you in the hallway and told you the story.
For someone who reads your columns and reads this book, how well do we really know you? How well do we know Dorothy Rosby? Or is it you're just giving us just a peek into who you are?
Well, I say, it's kind of funny, I share the dumbest things I've ever done in public, but that's not really true. I do keep the dumbest ones back. I share a lot, and but I do have a certain amount of things that I don't share. I always think when people tell me, I'm so glad you wrote that because that happened to me too, I'm kind of relieved, because I think if no one can relate to this, I am probably oversharing. So I'm glad that other people can relate, but I do keep some secrets too.
So I imagine if there are some things that happen to you that are just so personal and so intimate that then it wouldn't have that universal quality.
Yeah, although I almost feel like the more personal the story, the more likely that other people have experienced it and just been afraid to tell. I think it's kind of a nice thing to do, to tell people your mistakes, because then they can feel like they're not the only ones making them.
Well, I used two examples in my introduction, and they were both things that I myself has experienced. Like this past summer, just I flew overseas, and I was coming back and going through customs there, and I was just, for some reason, I don't know why, I was just really nervous, and the customs agent just looked at me and said, "What is it that you're hiding?" And reading your column, the same thing, just that experience of feeling guilty for no reason at all, which is a universal thing. It's kind of fun to read that then.
Yeah, I have always had the fear that I will at some point, and I never say the word bomb, never, ever. There's no reason. It just doesn't come up. But I just have a fear of being in line and, thinking that that it's just going to come out of my mouth and I'm going to be arrested, or that somehow I accidentally got the butter knife in my suitcase that morning. Why would I do that? But, those are the things you fear when you're standing there in line. It's very intimidating, I think. So.
Yeah. The other thing I mentioned was you have a column about friendship bread. And I don't know if everyone has experienced friendship bread, but maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, I was the recipient of some friendship bread starter dough once. And, they gave me a sample of the real bread, and that was so good. So when they gave me the dough, I thought, well, I can do this, and I'll be happy to try it. But it requires a certain amount of discipline. You have to add ingredients every day and, it's like having a pet in your kitchen, kind of. And it got to the point where the lid was blowing off the friendship bread starter dough in my kitchen like every night for a while. So, and then eventually I made the bread, and it really, I think used kitchen sponge kind of comes to mind when I think about that bread. I disposed of it, but the thing is, you still have starter dough that you're supposed to pass around to other people. And I just, I don't think friends give friends starter dough. That's not, I don't think it's a good idea, at least in some of our cases.
Yeah, you just feel like you're responsible for this bread. And there's this, normally if someone gives you something, it's like, fine, no, thank you very much. But here's something they give you. You're supposed to pass it along and keep this whole line going. So there's this whole responsibility. You feel like I have to take care of this.
That's how I felt. And the other thing I did wrong was I wanted to make it healthy. So I was using whole wheat flour and, honey and stuff. I don't know what all I did, but it was getting to be, it was kind of taking over our life, and it didn't work anyway. I've had really good friendship bread from other people. So, anyone that wants can give me the bread, but keep the dough. That's all I'm saying.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with humorist Dorothy Rosby. She has a new collection called I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better. And Dorothy, I'm wondering if it takes a certain amount of self-awareness to be a humor columnist?
I have really trained myself over years. Deadlines are a good thing. I have deadlines, and I have trained myself to be ever on the lookout for every possible idea, and I have quite an obsessive compulsive system so that I never run out of ideas, because that frightens me. The thought of a deadline with no idea is frightening to me. So I have quite a system. I'm very observant of certain things, and I carry a notebook with me wherever I go. But it's fun. I mean, it's fun for me too. I don't mean to make it sound like it's awful, because it's really fun to do that, to be an observer of all that's happening around you and, all that you do and other people do.
A lot of columnists, a lot of humorists turn to their families for a lot of their material. In reading the columns that are in this book, it's mostly about you. Do you not want to write about your family so much, or is it just that they're not as funny as you are?
Well, thank you for saying that, because they think I say too much about them. I'm going to get that in writing. No, I do mention them, but I'm a real believer in self-deprecating humor as opposed to poking fun at other people. I do on occasion use other people, but I'm almost always the butt of any joke that I tell. And so when my family is mentioned, I try to be kind, knowing that I'm going to have to live with them. But yeah, I my personal preference for the kind of humor I like is self-deprecating from other humorists, so that's the kind I tend to write to.
And how did you find your voice as a humorist? Was this something that was just a natural outgrowth of who you are, or did it take some time to be able to fashion this, I don't know if I want to call what you write in your column, if that's the sort of a character version of Dorothy Rosby, or if this is just exactly who you are?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a persona. I some people think I'm actually kind of serious, but I think it's taken a lot of years, really. And I would say the Toastmaster part has had a big part of it. A lot of public speaking. Speaking the humor has helped me to fine-tune the writing the humor. And then I grew up in a really big family. I'm number 9 out of 10 kids. And I think that really hones your humor, too. I come from a big, witty family, and I think that helps, too. Just having to speak out in that big bunch all the time, yeah.
So being number 9, that must have been difficult to get the attention of your parents and your siblings.
And so that might be why you try to make your parents laugh, I think. I think. And my father was very funny, and he loved to tell stories, and he loved to tell jokes, and he loved to pull pranks. And so I think, yeah, making him laugh was one of the ways that his kids could sort of get his attention. So, yeah, I think that did kind of fine-tune it for all of us. I would tell you I'm not the funniest person in my family. I come from a big bunch of very witty people, so...
Now, you've mentioned your public speaking and Toastmasters, and I was watching a stand-up that you did at the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop, I think it was earlier this year.
Yeah.
How, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, you're funny, you must naturally be a stand-up, but that's not necessarily the case, or again, getting back to what you're saying, that this is closely related to your writing and what your public speaking.
They are inseparable in my head, the two of the writing and the speaking. That stand-up was very fun and very scary, mm-hmm. because there were 400 people from around the country at the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop, and of course it's all humorous, only humorous there. It's a fabulous conference. So yeah, it takes like a lot of guts or a lot of stupidity to agree to do that, but I was so happy to do it, and I did a small town routine. Most of the people there are from bigger cities, so I did a whole spoof on coming from a small town. That was really fun, and I still hear people talking about that, you know, in that group, those groups talking about the small town wave. You know the small town wave, I bet.
Small town, I know it very well. And
yeah, one finger on the wheel, and yeah, you know, you just, yeah.
Particularly if you're in the middle of nowhere, say on Highway 34, and you see someone you haven't seen anyone, for, you know, haven't seen anyone else on the road for hours, you're a little bit more excited with your finger, though.
That's exactly right. Yeah, So that was the centerpiece of my my stand-up at the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop, yeah.
And you compare that to the one-finger wave in bigger cities, which is a little bit different, a little different,
yeah,
meaning,
yeah.
Different finger as well.
We are so much nicer here. I told them that, too, that we are so much nicer. And, you know, that's probably my humor, too, is I tend to go for the self-deprecating thing because I just can't be mean because I'm from the Midwest, so I just can't be mean.
Now, we mentioned the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop, Irma Bombeck, a wonderful humorist. I'm wondering if she or if there are other humorists that had some sort of influence on you and the way you write?
I suppose so. I did grow up, and she was in the newspapers when I was growing up, so I'm sure she did. I you know, followed Dave Barry for a long time, and I think they really did have an influence on me. And more than that, I think Irma Bombeck, you know, everybody who writes that kind of humor, domestic humor, day-to-day life humor, owes her a big debt of gratitude, because I think she really paved the way for all the rest of us, you know, showed publications that readers really wanted to read that, maybe showed readers that readers really wanted to read that kind of humor. So, yeah, she's my hero.
After you get started, how long did it take for you to then grow an audience and get your columns syndicated in other newspapers?
Well, I started writing for the Rapid City Journal. It's almost 19 years ago, and it wasn't long after that I started trying to market myself to other papers, and I chose to do small town papers because I feel like that's my type of humor, is more of a small town kind of humor. So right away I started to do that. So a lot of the papers I've had for 14 years, 12 years, many, many of them. I'm not so good at marketing, so I need to do more of that, but yeah, so some of them have been with me a very long time.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Rapid City Humor columnist Dorothy Rossby. She has a new book called I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better. We were talking earlier about the stand-up routine you did at the Irma Bombeck workshop, and you mentioned that took courage to do. I'm wondering, just even writing a column, if that takes a certain amount of courage to write these things about yourself and to share them with readers, people that, sure, you have your fans, but these are people that don't know you. They haven't met you.
I suppose, excuse me, I suppose it did. I've gotten to the point where when I'm writing, I try really hard not to self-edit and think, oh, someone might not like this. So I think I've kind of gotten past that with the writing. I kind of write whatever comes to me. But originally, yes, it did take a lot of courage. Just to put yourself out there is not an easy thing for a writer. Writers tend to be a little introverted, and there we are putting what we think right out there for the whole big world. So, yeah, I've gotten over that a little bit, but in the beginning, yeah, it did take a lot, to send out those letters saying, "Would you run my column?" That's really putting yourself out there for an introverted sort of gal.
Yeah, can you run this stuff that I write about me, please?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, are there some things that have happened to you that you've tried to turn into a column, but they just didn't work?
I would say yes and no, because I have this note-taking system. So where everything that I think of and observe winds up as a note and winds up in a file folder somewhere. And just because I haven't used it yet doesn't mean I will never use it. There are columns that I've written notes about over the span of, years, a decade, and eventually it turns into something. So nothing is really wasted for me. And even the icky things that happen, I jot them down because someday I might be able to use that, So, yeah, I don't think anything, I can say anything hasn't been written yet, because eventually it might be.
So you have these things, maybe keep them as a stockpile, particularly on those times when you have a deadline and you just don't have anything at the top of your head?
Yeah, exactly. I hate deadlines. I cannot live by deadlines. So I have a very obsessive compulsive system that keeps me from having to live by deadlines. I make notes constantly, throw the notes in a basket on top of my file cabinet. When the file cabinet gets full, I sort them into like files. So, topics, similar topics go in file folders. When the file folders get fat, there's an idea. And sooner or later, it all degenerates down to work, having to sit down and put it down. But I never really start with no ideas, the exception being if it's a story, if there's some incident that happens, and I might start to finish. But otherwise, it's almost always I've been thinking about it, mulling it over for a very long time before it becomes something I might consider writing about.
Do you think that over the course of writing this column, nearly 19, 20 years, that you've learned things about yourself that maybe you wouldn't have if you hadn't been writing?
Yeah, I think that's probably right, because even though it's humor, I am writing about my faults and foibles and the human condition. And so, yeah, I think that's probably right. I always think of writing a column, or any good writer, as being kind of a mirror too. The reader is looking into your life, but in essence, they're being reflected back to their own life, or you're telling their stories, and it reminds you or reminds them of their own story. So, yeah, I think I might be learning, and I don't know if my readers are learning, but at least they're thinking about their own stories, too, when I'm telling mine.
Dorothy Rosby is a Rapid City humor columnist. Her new book is called I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better. Dorothy, thanks so much for taking the time
to
talk with us.
Thanks.